Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into something absolutely critical if you're operating online. How do you actually pick the right web development company? Because look, the numbers are pretty staggering. We've checked the sources. Almost 69% of the global population is online. That's what, 5.65 billion users? So yeah, having an online presence isn't just nice anymore.
It's essential, absolutely.
It's table stakes for reaching people, building trust, really driving growth.
And, you know, that means your developer isn't just some vendor you hire, they're strategic. The partner you choose, well, they basically shape how users see you, how they interact with you, and ultimately if they trust your brand. So our mission today, we've taken all the info from our sources and boiled it down into like a core 10-step strategy. Mm-hmm. The goal is to get you past that feeling of being swamped with options and give you a clear, actionable plan.
Think of it as the ultimate checklist. But first, just to hammer home why quality matters instantly, get this. Developers have about 50 milliseconds.
Tiny, isn't it?
50 milliseconds to make a good first impression. And that's purely visual, right? Clean layout, intuitive feel. That's how fast their work needs to click.
Yeah, it's like the quickest draw in the West, but for websites. And it really shows why getting the right developer is just non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Before we jump into the how of choosing, let's quickly unpack why a quality developer is so crucial. What are you actually paying for? Okay, first up, security. And this is more than just seeing that little padlock icon, you know. A good dev team puts real measures in place. Secure payment gateways if you sell stuff, encryption, regular updates to patch holes. They set up SSL certificates.
Right, that secures the connection.
Exactly. Builds trust, makes your brand look reliable. It's foundational.
Okay, what's next?
Speed. Load times. It's not just about people being impatient, though they are.
Huh, definitely.
It directly impacts how long they stick around, how much they explore. Good devs optimize everything. Code, images, using caching smartly. If your site takes, say, 3 seconds to load, you're losing people. Simple as that.
Gone. Okay, third.
Accessibility. This is huge now, and rightly so. It's not just ticking a legal box. It's about making sure everyone can use your site. Following WCAG guidelines, those are the international standards.
Things like text contrast, keyboard navigation.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Making it work for screen readers, for example. It improves the experience for literally every user.
Makes sense. And number four?
Scalability. Thinking ahead. Your website has to be able to handle growth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
More traffic, maybe new features down the line. It can't just collapse.
So they need to build it with that in mind from day one.
Absolutely. Using scalable architecture, often leveraging cloud services so you have that flexibility, that reliability.
Okay. And the last core benefit.
Mobile responsiveness. We all know this, but it bears repeating. Most people are browsing on their phones. If your site looks broken or is clunky on mobile, well, you're basically invisible to a massive chunk of your potential audience.
So security, speed, accessibility, scalability, and mobile. Got it. Those are the outcomes you're aiming for.
Exactly. That's the benchmark for what a good partnership delivers.
All right, let's shift gears to the actual selection process. Step one, clarify your goals. Seems obvious, but people rush this.
They really do.
You absolutely have to define the purpose first. Is it e-commerce? A portfolio? An information hub? Then get specific about the functions. List everything. Do you need a CMS, you know, like WordPress or something similar? E-commerce features. Does it need to look great on all devices? So responsive design. And crucially, think about the future. If you might need custom web application development down the road.
Or specialized tools for your users.
Exactly. You need to flag that now and factor in that future scalability. Be crystal clear. No vague descriptions.
Yeah, vagueness costs you money later.
Yeah.
Once you've got that internal clarity, then it's step two, finding potential partners. You want someone with a solid track record, right? A portfolio that shows a variety, not just the same site design copy-pasted.
But you can't just trust their own website's hype, can you?
Definitely not. Our sources really hammer this. Use a third-party validation. Go to platforms like Clutch, Guru, Good Firms, Design Rush. Read verified client reviews. On Clutch, for example, look for those high overall ratings from verified businesses.
So do your homework up front using independent sources.
Precisely. It helps you build a short list based on actual performance, not just slick marketing.
Okay, goal set. Potential partners shortlisted. Now we dig deeper, right? Beyond the sales pitch, step three is evaluating experience and expertise. And you mentioned it's not just about how many years they've been around.
No, it's the breadth. Have they worked across different industries? Maybe tackled problems similar to yours, but also completely different ones. That diversity often means they bring fresh thinking.
That's a good point. What about other skills?
Well, here's a tip that came up in the sources. Does a partner also have marketing know-how? Integrated marketing experience?
Why is that important for a developer?
Because development doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? A team that gets SEO, understands conversion funnels, knows the user journey, they're not just building code. They're building something designed to actually work for your business goals, to connect with your audience. That's incredibly valuable.
Ah, so it's about building something effective, not just functional. Okay, step four, reviewing previous work and client reviews. We touched on the platforms, but now it's about deeper analysis.
Exactly. Look past the shiny portfolio screenshots. Dig into their case studies. A good case study explains the client's problem, how the agency approached it, their methodology, and crucially, the results.
The metrics.
Yeah, the actual impact. That shows problem-solving ability. And when you're reading those third-party reviews again, look for patterns. Consistent praise is great, but also look for repeated complaints, communication issues, missed deadlines, scope creep.
So not looking for perfection, but consistency and honesty.
Right. Transparency is key.
Okay, that makes sense. Look for the process behind the product. Now, step five, assess technology tools and team structure. This feels technical, but important. You need to ask what they actually use, right? Languages, frameworks.
Absolutely. You need to know if they're proficient in the tools your project actually needs. Like if you need a super dynamic site, maybe they need strong React.js skills. If it's data heavy, maybe Python is key. If it's more straightforward, maybe PHP is fine.
So you need some idea of your technical needs from step one.
It helps.
Yeah.
Or at least be able to describe the functionality you need so they can tell you what tech they'd use and why. It ensures you're getting the right tool for the job, not just what they happen to know best.
And what about newer stuff like AI? Everyone's talking about AI. Should we ask about AI-driven tools?
You definitely should. Leading firms are already using AI, not just in the final website maybe, but in their own development process. For personalization maybe, or even for things like QA testing to catch bugs faster. If a company seems resistant to even discussing new tech or adopting modern techniques, that could be a red flag. It might be falling behind.
Right, good point. Now, you mentioned team structure earlier and listed a whole bunch of specialists, front-end, back-end, UI, UX, QA, even AI devs and marketers. That sounds like a big team, potentially expensive. How does a smaller business ensure they're getting actual expertise, not just one person stretched thin?
That's a really fair question, and it loops back to clarity and communication. You're paying for the roles to be filled competently. Even if one person wears multiple well-fitting hats, let's say, the agency needs to clearly define who is responsible for what. You absolutely need someone clearly owning the front end, the user interface, how it looks and feels, someone owning the back end, the server side stuff, the data. You need dedicated UI and UX design focus, making sure it's intuitive, not just pretty. And critically, QA testers.
The quality control.
Yes. Who is actually testing this thing rigorously? Who's responsible for security checks? If they're vague about who handles testing or security architecture, that's your red flag. It likely means essential steps are being skipped.
Got it. So clarity on roles, even if the team isn't huge, shows a professional process. Okay, so we understand their talent. Now let's talk about the actual partnership communication, money, the nitty-gritty. Step six, prioritize clear communication. You said this is the bedrock. How do you gauge that early on?
From the very first interaction. How responsive are they? Did their proposal feel like a template, or did it actually speak to your specific goals you outlined back in step one? Good communication isn't just fast replies, it's proactive. Do they anticipate issues? Do they explain things clearly?
Okay, makes sense. Now the big ones, step seven and eight, project management and budget.
Right. For step seven, project management, you need total transparency. Ask about their process. Do they use Agile? Waterfall? How will they keep you updated? What are the milestones? How do you provide feedback or approve things?
A clear roadmap reduces surprises.
Exactly. Fewer unexpected delays, less frustration.
And step eight, budget. This is where things can go sideways. What should people look out for beyond the main price tag?
First, understand the pricing model up front. Is it a fixed bid, one price for the whole defined project? Or are they billing hourly?
Pros and cons to both.
Yeah. Fixed bid gives you cost certainty, but can be rigid if scope changes. Hourly offers flexibility, but you need to manage it closely to avoid costs spiraling. There's no single right answer. It depends on the project and your comfort level.
Okay, model clear. What about hidden costs?
Ah, yes. People forget to budget for ongoing things. Licenses for plugins or special software. Maybe high-performance hosting isn't included. What about ongoing maintenance after launch? A good partner lists these potential costs out. Don't just go for the cheapest quote.
Because you might sacrifice quality or get hit later.
Almost always. You need to balance that cost with their expertise, communication, and the results they've shown they can deliver. Think long-term value, reliability.
Solid advice. Okay, we're almost there. The last two steps focus on after the launch and the legal stuff. Step 9, evaluate support and maintenance. Like you said, launch day isn't the end. What happens next?
You need a clear agreement. Who handles software updates? Security patches? What if something breaks? What's the response time for critical issues? Their service level agreement, or SLA, if they seem hesitant to commit to post-launch support.
That suggests they might not stand by their work long-term.
Could be, yeah. It's a warning sign about the quality or longevity of the code.
Okay, and finally, step 10, legal and contractual considerations. Super important.
Absolutely critical. You need to read that contract carefully, pay attention to payment schedules, how changes are handled.
Yeah.
But the absolute most important part.
Let me guess. Ownership.
Ownership.
Yep.
Of the code, the data, the intellectual property. You need an explicit clause stating that you own the final product, especially any custom code or design. Ambiguity here is a massive risk for your business later on.
Definitely need to protect your assets.
Okay.
That covers the 10 steps. Can you give us a quick rundown of the major red flags to avoid? The absolute deal breaker.
Sure. Three main ones emerge from the sources. First, watch out for anyone pushing a rigid, one-size-fits-all approach. Your project is unique. The strategy should be too. If it feels like a template,
walk away.
Second, if they rush you to sign a contract without clearly discussing timelines, detailed costs, and project specifics, huge red flag. That lack of transparency spells trouble.
And the third,
a failure to prioritize innovation. If they seem stuck in the past, not adopting newer, more efficient technologies or techniques, they're likely going to deliver something that's already behind the curve.
Okay. Cookie-cutter solutions, lack of transparency, and sticking to old tech.
Got it.
This has been incredibly helpful, taking something that feels overwhelming and breaking it into a clear, actionable plan.
That's the goal.
Finding the right partner really does underpin everything. Security, speed, scalability, nailing that crucial first impression.
It really does.
Yeah.
And just building on that last point about the contract, about IP, here's something to maybe chew on after this deep dive. Think about why having crystal clear ownership of your intellectual property is so vital for your future flexibility.
How so?
Well, what happens if you want to switch development teams in 5 years, or maybe even sell the business? How does owning that code, that digital asset, outright give you leverage and keep your options open? It's about long-term strategic control.
That's a powerful final thought, thinking beyond the launch to the entire life cycle of your digital presence. Excellent. Well, hopefully this 10-step guide gives you that comprehensive checklist you need. Thanks for diving deep with us today.